and welcome to Paradigm Playbook, a podcast for entrepreneurs in the business of sports. Your hosts, Dave Kozak and Steve Cook, are business owners, successful entrepreneurs, sports enthusiasts, avid readers, and longtime friends. For years, they've read every business book on the market and built successful companies with what they've learned. This podcast will give you the critical takeaways in just 15 minutes a week. It's a quick and easy playbook for building a winning sports business. And now, here are your hosts, Dave and Steve.
Thank you for listening. Visit ParadigmPlaybook.com to discover how we can support you and your business. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paradigm Playbook's podcast.
Did you have to stop?
I had to think for a second which one we're doing here. What are we doing today?
Welcome back.
Anyway, I'm your host, Dave Kozak, alongside my co-host, Mr. Steve Cook.
Good morning, David.
And Steve, you have a subject matter that is fresh on the top of your mind that you want to discuss today. So why don't you kick us off?
So going way back at the beginning of Paradigm Playbook, we kind of introduced a book a week during the
Matter of fact, that was the genesis of the whole thing.
Yeah. So it was a book a week. And so we've kind of got off that and stuck to just general business topics. But I thought it'd be fun going back to discussion of customer experience, because I just got done reading the book Unreasonable Hospitality. And I guess my general...
Where'd you get that book, Steve?
General reaction is just like, wow, what the hell?
Over the top. If you're not familiar, Will Garda, it's Gallarda. Owns Madison Park, 11 Madison Park, a restaurant in Manhattan that was the number one rated restaurant.
Officially the number one.
Officially.
They had to work to get there, but they got to be number one rated worldwide.
Yeah, Michelin stars, the whole deal, right? And the story starts in a setting where they get invited to the, you know, the top 50 restaurant celebration, and they go and they're thinking, you know, they're somewhere in like the top 10, top 20, whatever.
That would make them happy.
They know that they weren't number one, but they were going to be up there. And when they announce the names, they announce them in descending order. So they start with number 50, and sure enough,
bingo,
they were number 50. And yeah, he sets the setting of the room and like the gasp that they had when they were number 50, and they just were, from that moment forward, relentless in their pursuit of number one, right? Yeah.
And what's interesting about the book is not the specifics of what they did, but the detail to which they took it. And I think that's where we can take that and we can apply it to our business or the sports business or any business. So they're in a restaurant business, and the things that I would never think of in a high class restaurant, there's only one way to set the fork, the knife, the napkin, the salad fork, there's only one right way. And the spacing is impeccable. It's exactly how you want. There's only one right way to greet the customer when they walk in. There's only one right path to take them to their table. There's only one right way to pass another server in an aisle. Mm-hmm. So all those details to me, and I got started thinking about, well, what could we do better in our business that are details that we're not asking you to spend more money on the customer experience, but how can you improve the customer experience?
And I think the cool part, as he's describing his epiphany in the book, he starts talking about, you know, yeah, he's a great chef and they've got a great location and they got all that stuff, right? But his realization was that, like, how do you really determine who's the best chef in the world, right? You're talking about guys that it's incredible. They create incredibly flavorful and delicious food. And, you know, the palate is a unique thing. So the dish I may like, you may like the way the other guy cooked it. And so you're picking the fly crap out of the pepper, essentially, mm-hmm. right? And so his realization was, yeah, you could argue he's better, you could argue someone else is better, but what you can argue is the experience. Mm-hmm. You can't argue how they were going to get it done, and they were going to make the client the most important thing in that experience. And that's what drove their rankings, was the look, the feel, the taste, the touch, the way they were dressed, all the things that Steve described. And Steve, if you go back to some of our previous episodes and you listen to the customer journey, and we talked about, you know, how a customer sees the company and views your business, that's all well and good. But what happens when they walk through your threshold?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how many times have I mentioned to you, like, how do you greet the client? How do you clean the office? Who's responsible for these things? It's a cultural environment, right, that you're creating. And, you know, some people could argue that it was micromanagement, but they can't argue with the result, right?
Yeah. And I think a couple of things that he got away from. One was customer satisfaction. So your goal is never a satisfied customer. If you're not driving them over the top, and, you know, another great book, if you're not making them into a raving fan, then, you know, that's not what they were interested in. They were going for raving fans. They were going for ultimate experiences. And some of the things that they did, based on simple things like, you know, the waiter overhearing a conversation that, like, so the hot dog story is like one of the great stories is, they overheard a client's talking, you know, the only thing we didn't do in New York was have a Nathan's hot dog in it. And the waiter overheard that, tell somebody, someone runs out on the street, buys a Nathan hot dog, gives it to the chef. He
cuts it up into four equal pieces, garnishes it, sets it on a plate,
and says, we're not letting you get out of New York without having a Nathan's hot dog. Well, you think they got a customer for life.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things where you're, you know, it's you're tuned in. Mm-hmm. You're tuned into the experience and the vibe, right? One of the things that I always appreciated is if I'm at a place and somebody's always cleaning, it always seems like, and those places to me, they care about they don't want you to have the shivers when you walk in, right? They're always trying to clean places, and it just has an effect. So the idea that waiter would overhear something and immediately take action, right? That is a trained response. That is a cultural response. That is what we do. That is not one individual thinking outside the box. That is a culture of thinking outside the box for that unreasonable hospitality, that over the top satisfaction. And I'd love to say I do it, but I don't. I'd love to say that I was to that level and had that. I don't.
No, but
I strive to.
Yeah. And I think the thing about the book that was interesting to me, now this was, you know, a high price, high class restaurant that they were developing. So they had pretty good sized budgets they're working with, and they're charging a pretty penny for the meal. So I get it. But most of what they talked about was culture and attitude, the way they spoke, the way they moved, all those things that we can all do, you know, a little bit more of that. And I just think it's so much fun to think about. And I agree with you. I don't do all that stuff. I wish I did. I wish I was that guy. But I'll tell you one thing that I do that I like, and I kind of fit, and I think Will would like it. So we have at Grand Slam, we have a series of automated batting cages where people are coming in to hit. And every once in a while, one stops throwing balls. Something happens. It gets jammed, or the motor slows down. Something happens. My response to that when a customer tells me is I start jogging to the back of the batting cages. And it's not about whether I can fix it. It's about that I jogged.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as I start to jog, that customer is, oh, take your time. It's okay. So I've brought them over to my side with a simple act of jogging at three steps. And at my age, a few steps is tough. So like, I'll take that. But so by jogging and showing it, it's what you said before. It's showing that their experience is what's most important to you. That's what you're there for. And Will, who was partners with the chef in that business, from the beginning wanted to make a point that the hospitality was every bit as important as the meal itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Steve, I think there's something else you do that you, that goes to the point is I've been at that counter and I've seen how you react when that happens. And yeah, you jog, but you always give them another token too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. It's like there's nothing worse than the experience. And, you know, Will makes another good point is when there's a not a outright dispute, but a dispute, a disagreement between a customer and staff or whatever, it's never about proving you're right.
Correct.
That never enters into the conversation. It's about bringing them back to your side. So that's what you have to do. You know, for me, it's easy. I don't have to give them another $30 steak. I have to give them a $2 token. So it's a little bit easier for me. But that's what you do all the time is find those little things that are going to pull them back towards your side.
Yeah. And you know, the idea of the customer dispute, and I think this is something that I try and harp on all the time with my staff, and harp's probably the wrong word, but explain how to deal with it is, regardless of whose fault it is a situation you have to deal with. So does fault have any bearing in the matter itself, right? It is, if the customer perceives it to be a problem, then it is a problem, right? Whether I think it's a problem doesn't matter. They think it's a problem. And so your next step, you know, you go back to relentless solution focus is, what's it something I can do in the next 30 seconds that boom, I can fix this. I can make this better. I can bring them back to my side. And so a lot of times the easiest diffusion is simply, oh, you know what? I apologize. We'll take care of that. We'll create a solution and then move on. And, you know, whether it's on the phone with a customer, whether it's a batting cage token, whether it's, hey, great, it exists. You could argue with that client, but what good does that do?
No, the best thing to do is acknowledge whatever they're saying. Even if it's, you know, there's ice in your parking lot. Darn. Yeah. Like, I'm so sorry about that. Boom. You're on it. It's not, even if you just sold it and you think it, you did. So you react to that customer comment, and everything is about pulling it from what, Jason Selk said in,
RSF
is that you got to get out of that negative thought pattern within 60 seconds. Well, at 11 Madison Park, what Will was saying was, we're not going to give them the 60 seconds. We want them to anticipate it.
Yeah.
So they have the answer before the customer says. And I never thought about this. So if you have a table of four that all orders the lamb, whatever, mm-hmm. the chef makes five when there's four ordered. He's anticipating that one will be dropped, not cooked well enough, not right. So he's got that fifth one. So when someone sends back a meal, now you got to understand that they're sending back a meal that chef is so proud of that he's put everything into, and he still takes it back and delivers a new one.
Yep.
So that's anticipation, and that's what we can do in our businesses. What do we do? Are we anticipating, you know, I will use my place because it's easy. Mm-hmm. And we have someone that is taking batting lessons and they're not progressing. If we haven't prepared for what to say when the parent says, do you think you should be progressing faster? If we haven't answered that question, and we better have, I'll bring you back into this, a better answer than have Z considered violin or whatever. No, we're not going, but it's the anticipation of what could be a problem. And you do that by digging deep into your business and saying, I'm just thinking of another story. You know, what are your friction points? Where may you have a problem? And study your friction points. Is it the entryway? Is it the walk to the table? Is it overcrowded tables? It's I can never get a seat. Is it, you know, the seating's too close? The leg room's not enough? Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you can't get rid of them all, but you can understand them all.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, we talk, and if you correlate that back to sales, right, Steve, a good salesperson hits all the objections that could come prior to going for a close.
Yeah.
Right. That's essentially what you're doing in that. You're looking at all the friction that could exist and you're trying to avoid and solve that problem in real time. And sometimes it could be as much as saying, hey, if this table's not acceptable, let me know and we'll move mm-hmm. it. And the person, oh, no, it's fine. And they sit yeah. down and problem solved. But if you didn't say that and they sat down and they banged their knee on the leg, you know, a different ball game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So again, I think the anticipation is huge. Now,
let me go one more story. Ahead, sure. We'll get on. So I happen to be writing this chapter in a book that I'm putting together, and I can't talk about customer experience without going into my favorite sports team of all time, the Savannah Bananas. And I just love what they do. So those that aren't familiar with Savannah Bananas, have we talked about this on
no
this
but podcast? I think we just opened up a next subject.
I'm sorry now. About this, but so like this was a minor league team that was doing well, attracting less than 100 people to a game, making no money, losing money. New owners bought it and said, okay, we've got to change things up. So going through customer surveys and interviews and all this, they found out what were all the friction points mm-hmm. and we're going to eliminate that. So people say, the game's just too long. Boom. Savannah Bananas only play 2 hours. It's like the fans aren't involved in the game at all. Boom. If a fan catches a fly ball, it's an out. They just started changing
and
the rules.
And they rewrote the rules of the
they
game.
They rewrote the rules. Now, Savannah Bananas are sold out for 2 years and they're on the road traveling to other cities.
Did we help you learn, grow, and improve? Leave us a review to let us know how we're doing. Thank you. Yeah, and they go play big stadiums now. They yeah, do all this yep. and the, you know, they rewrote how an inning is played. They rewrote what you can do on a walk and how many you basically, if it's four balls, you get as far as you can before every player on the field. Every player on the field has to touch the baseball. Every defensive player has to touch the baseball and you sprint as far as you can until every player touches it and that's where you stop.
Well, that and it's because in minor leagues, they had customers, fans saying, so many walks. It's so boring. And a walk is boring. So it's like,
how do you make it exciting?
Yeah. So they looked at every friction point. So let's go back to our businesses and say, what are our friction points that, you know, so we had friction points at Grand Slam. So we do a lot of parties.
Mm-hmm.
Our friction points were, you know, we were slow in delivering our pizza. So, you know, our solution was we outsourced our pizza. So we have a pizza place across the street. We tell them what time the pizza's delivered. We have no other worries. They deliver the pizza because, like the chef, they're making an extra pizza all the time. They always have. So if I call them up in the last minute and say, we had an order in for 7 pizzas. Can you make it 8? No problem. The time doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
We get that extra pizza. So that was a friction point for us, you know, and the good news is in today's world, if you remove friction points, the customers are willing to pay for high quality service. They're not willing to be pay for being satisfied customers. They want to be wowed.
Yeah. You know, I'll use the example. When I go places, I want to have an experience. I don't want to fight and have to, you know, I'm a little bit bougie like that. And, you know, I don't like the standing long lines and things like that. I'll pay so that I don't have to, so that I can get the experience, right? Well, I take my kids skiing is a perfect example. Montage Mountain in the Poconos does Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, every non-holiday, they do what's called Ski for All. You get lift tickets and rental for $40 all day. And it was a way for them to try and get people to come Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. But for me, it's perfect because I don't like weekend skiing because you stand in line more than you ski down a mountain. And it's all included. I had a trip scheduled to go and it was like $200 a person for the day. And I was like, I'm not doing it. We're going, we'll go to Montage. And so we drove an extra hour to have that experience where you spend 90% of your time skiing and 10% of your time on the lift.
It's interesting. What you just mentioned is something else. I keep going back to the Savannah Bananas, but that was one of their other complaints. After, you know, we get into the game, then we got to buy a hot dog, then we got to buy a drink. They just included it all in. You know, for $70, you get everything. You want two hot dogs, take two hot dogs. You know, it's like, stop nickel and diming and just say, okay, how can I make this customer happy? And, you know, they realize that they're going to pay for it. People are willing to pay to be wowed. And I think that is, you know, it's like, and in the corporate world, we talk about the customer journey from prospect to customer to sale. And I think we spent less time working with our existing customers or clients than we did in getting a new one. And if all you're ever doing is replacing customers, then your business is never going to grow and certainly not scale.
Yeah. And if you think about the Savannah Bananas example, is they made it fun, easy, and enjoyable to go and experience it. Well, when you have that type of experience, when's the next time you want to have it? As soon as possible.
Yeah, right.
Right. So they're sold out. And so you have people now that are, and when they tour, they're sold out. And when they're coming to a town close to you, people drive to go see them because the experience is such that it takes the stress and the pain out of it. And, you know, that's an incredible business model and a way to revamp a game that at those minor league levels can be drab.
One of the interesting things is the first reaction you get when you suggest that a business start doing things like this, I'm not sure I can afford to do this. And I'm going to put the case forward that says, I'm not sure you can afford not to do it because somebody in your market is going to do that. Someone is going to offer that little extra something that is going to put them ahead of you. So I don't think it's a decision. And then if you look at how much money you spend in marketing, you know, and you know, you had talked about spending 30% of your revenues or whatever on marketing, how, if you develop this reputation that goes ahead of you, can you reduce your marketing budget because you've built up a tribe and everyone, you know, if you go from prospect to customer to fan to raving fan, then that raving fan becomes a disciple. And they're out, they're your marketing arm. That's who's telling it. If they have guests coming into town, they're going to, you know what? We got to go over here. You know, you got to see this when you're in town. And that's what happened at 11 Madison Park, is that they didn't have to market anymore because they were rated Michelin number one. You know what's interesting? You know how that Michelin, I never knew this, why Michelin holds the standards for restaurants? Because originally when they did it, the people had to drive from all over Europe to go to these restaurants to test them. And they would talk about how many tires they'd be willing to wear out to get to that restaurant. So it became a Michelin. It's actually the tires.
How about that?
Yeah. So it's a fascinating thing.
Well, there's another one that I think is a blue ocean type. And if blue ocean strategy is see what the, yeah, I think blue ocean strategy by definition is find the friction points, eliminate the friction points, and you just created something that no one else has, right?
Well, yeah, it's telling you to move into a space where competition is irrelevant.
Yeah.
There's no one's going to say, oh, we're better than 11 Madison Park. It's just not going to happen.
Yep. So Topgolf, are you familiar with Topgolf?
Yeah.
So driving ranges have been around forever. Right. And country clubs and the game of golf, very old, very long. It was a very hoity toity event early. It's gotten more in the public realm. Tiger Woods was a great component to that and sort of the excitement of young. But Top Golf is a triple decker. They're all the same, right? It's a triple decker driving range. And they created a technology in the golf ball that allows them to trace the ball, show it on a computer screen. They feed balls. You can play games like Angry Birds so your kids can come enjoy it. There's bar service, there's food service, and it's 365 days a year. And so they eliminated the seasonality of driving ranges. They eliminated the hey, you drive, you go to the driving range and then you go to dinner, or you eat dinner and then go hit some balls. It's all one thing. It's a full entertainment. So they rewrote how that was done, and it's a great experience, right? And so, you know, I was there with my kids this past weekend, and I didn't have to say a thing to my children. Four kids from 12 down to 4 years old. And I put their names in, I pressed Angry Birds, and they went, they went to playing golf. And we sat there and had an incredible time. But it's that, and the hospitality is good. It's wait service, so you don't have to go, you know, and get it. It comes back. I just think it's that same type of mentality of how can you change and give an unreasonable expectation of something that has a historic persona.
Well, I think you're seeing it in pretty much every industry. I was just thinking about the movie theater, you know, right here.
Movie tavern.
Movie tavern is the same thing. It's, you know, you don't decide to go to the movies and dinner, or dinner then movies. It's served with your movie.
Yeah.
And why don't you want to sit through a 3-hour movie? Yeah, the chair's not that comfortable. Well, now it's a recliner.
Yeah.
So there's all these little things that fit into what you do. And the irrelevance that we place upon certain things in the sports business, you always talk about the parent viewing area. So in a lot of children's sports centers, there's a parental viewing area that keeps them away from the kids, but they can see their kids. And if you have 3- and 4-year-old, you want to keep an eye on even when they're in class. You know, using steel folding chairs in there is not as preferable as spending a few extra dollars and having a little padding for them to sit on and make it. It's having a coffee maker in the parental waiting room. And even as simple, and this is the one that you always hit me with, why can't someone walk in and say hello to those people when they're sitting there? Why can't they say how you're doing? Why can't you engage them? I'll talk about Grand Slam, because my favorite part of Grand Slam is, you know, we have a front counter where people buy tokens for the cages. Make it the equivalent of, you know, working as a bartender with no alcohol, because I'm standing behind a counter. It kind of looks like a bar, but I like the chit chat, and that's what people come in for, because we talk baseball, and that's cool. That's why people go to a bar. So, you know, is 10 tokens expensive? Not as expensive as 2 beers.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I have that advantage, and it's just engaging with the customer, making their experience just a little bit more. And if you take any sport and say, okay, how can we do it? I bet you today everybody can sit down and write out 10 things that we can do that will make our business better without spending an extra nickel.
I don't disagree. And I'd be interested to see the difference in token sales when you're behind the counter versus when you're not.
I get all the old people.
but you chat them up. So.
Yeah. And it's pricing has something to do with it. And we've talked about that and the way you set pricing. Cause like we have, there's no reason for anybody to ever buy 3 tokens. Once you're off 2, you go to 6. There's no reason to buy 3, 4, or 5. So we don't sell that number, but that's all pricing.
Yeah. Well, and I'll give an example in our business. We have we're in a very old building, and so it's got a nostalgia when you walk in, and people are always, and it's known as Arendelle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I always say, welcome to Arendelle when I'm talking to people. And then they want to know the history and they want to understand the building, it's always a great segue. But my office is on the first floor and I've got 15 people on the second, between the second and third floor. So they're never client facing. Not that they're never client facing, but I'm always on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And if my door is open to my office, I go through my office into a conference room, and then we have a waiting area and a couch. And no matter who it is, when I hear the front door open and someone come in, I walk out and say, welcome to Arendelle. You know, have you been helped, or can I help you with something? And that's me as the owner of the business and the company. And I think it just speaks volume to whoever it is that's walking in the door, maybe they want to make sure they're in the right place. Maybe they haven't been helped. Maybe they need to use the restroom. I can guide them through all that stuff. So it's that welcoming environment. You know, I always say people want to know that they're at the right place. They want to know that they're in the right place. And I think that stuff is the little things you can do. You know, welcome to Grand Slam.
Yeah, and just to get them off edge so that they're not nervous about being there. And like, I mean, you've been behind the counter when people come in and say, hey, I've never been here before. Well, you don't dig right into saying, well, you know, it's going to cost you. No, it's, well, welcome. Glad you finally found us. You know, it's like, it's awesome. And, you know, and
yeah, hopefully it won't be so long before the next one.
Yeah. And I mean, and the way I do it, and, you know, I recommend this for anybody that can get away with it. I approach everything with a touch of humor, and I have fun, and I find most people like it. Now, there are some people that don't like my sense of humor, and, you know, like, hi, I've never been here before. And I said, it's okay. We've only been here 40 years. So, you know, maybe you're just finding your way,
yeah.
You know, so, but most people will smile and they'll be fine with that. So, but anything you can do to relax a customer, make them more, because where does everybody want to go? Everybody wants to go home. So if you can make it feel like home and it's as comfortable as home. And I mean, you have a little bit of that here in Arendelle in that, you know, you come in the waiting room, it's not a sterile, it's not like a doctor's office waiting room. There's a couch there. And yeah. You know, it's
a nice couch.
And in fact, Niall just pointed out the most comfortable chair in the entire building to me, which I didn't know before. Now I know where to go. So.
Oh yeah, that's the napper. it reminds me of a good old TV sitcom called Cheers.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Where everybody knows your name.
That's right? It.
And so the more comfortable you can make someone, and that was one of the things at 11 Madison Park too. They want to know who's coming. They want to know the names. They want to be able to address people, you know. So anyway, we're out of time on that subject,
yeah,
Steve.
Yeah, we could go forever.
Absolutely.
It's fun.
Hope you guys learned something about this. Remember, in it's not the knowledge you gain from the show or from anywhere, from any of these books. It's the application of the knowledge, and it's what you do with it once you have it that makes a difference. So pick something and apply it. Do something different tomorrow than you did today, right? And see if it has an effect.
Yeah, I hope our discussions make you think, because that's what it does for me. Every time we pick a topic, my mind starts spinning, and the more we get into it, oh, I got one more story. You know, I'm not going to do any more stories today, but I hope it makes you think.
Well, and as you're sitting here talking, Steve, I'm back in my office going, all right, I forgot about that. I forgot about that little point that, you know, I used to know. So yeah,
very good.
If you like the show, guys, please like, subscribe, and share it with friends and colleagues. And hopefully you're learning stuff along the way.
Everybody, make it a great day.
Know someone who could benefit from our business expertise? Send them our way. Thank you.
Paradigm Playbook members, your exclusive content, including the related page from the playbook and game plan video for applying this concept to your business, are available now. Check your inbox today. Visit ParadigmPlaybook.com for past episodes and additional resources for running a successful sports business. See you next week.